Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
What does one U.S. senator think about Zika funding, a potential shipping crisis, EpiPen costs, and more? Let's go in-depth with Senator Chuck Grassley from New Hartford.
Hi, Dr. Baum.
How are you, Senator?
Very good. Well, I hate to tell you I'm very good, because if you're in Washington, D.C. and you say you're very good, you probably think there's something wrong with him.
Well, I attribute it to you just got back in session, right?
Last Tuesday, we were in session, and there's question about if we get funding done and Zika done this week. There's two things could happen. One, the Senate could go into pro forma sessions, go home, and if the House accepted what we funded and the Zika compromise, then we'd be done until after the election. Or if the House didn't accept what we did, then we'd have to come back into session maybe parts of the next 2 weeks till we finally reach an agreement. And I don't know which is the best opportunity, but it does seem that even the Democrats would like to get the session done a little bit sooner. But either way, we were scheduled to adjourn, I think, on October the 7th or something like that, and I think there's a firm commitment to get out of here before October the 1st.
I guess it being an election year, everybody wants to go home.
Well, yeah, and it might surprise you that the Democrats would want to go home, because there's only 10 Democrats up and 24 Republicans up, and it seems to me like they'd be better off if we were in session and Republicans were campaigning. But there's some feeling that maybe the Democrats feel that there's some campaigning that their candidates need to do.
Well, you mentioned Zika funding. And are you going to have a compromise? You mentioned a compromise, too. That's a rare word we hear these days.
Yeah, there'll have to be a compromise because of the fact that we can't get 60 votes. We can get 52 of 54 Republicans, but the Democrats are filibustering it. So we're going to have to sit down with them and reach some sort of a compromise, or we'll never get the funding bill passed.
Well, the Democrats say that there's a number of poison pills in that legislation. It's not just about Zika. It's also about no funding for Planned Parenthood, clean water issues, I don't know, some other matters.
Well, let's address the two that you mentioned. Let's start with clean water. Mosquitoes are carrying Zika. You can spray for mosquitoes and kill mosquitoes, and then you have less mosquitoes spreading Zika. There's some environmentalists who say, well, you shouldn't be spraying. Well, is it a crisis or isn't it a crisis? So I don't think that one holds water. You mentioned defunding of Planned Parenthood. There is money in Zika for women's health, which there should be, and there's no defunding of Planned Parenthood except for Puerto Rico, and I don't understand what there is about Puerto Rico, but the Democrats don't talk about Planned Parenthood and Puerto Rico only. They're leading you and other people to believe that we're actually taking money away from Planned Parenthood nationally, and that's absolutely wrong. What I think that Planned Parenthood people feel that they should have some additional money. There's additional money, but it goes to all health organizations. In Iowa, I think they have 13 Planned Parenthood organizations. We have 60-some other public health agencies where women can get help. And so we're including more money nationwide for women's health. It just isn't going to Planned Parenthood, but they're not being defunded.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley.
I'd like to talk with you about something else that's sort of odd. It may be odd, but I think it's ultimately important. It's this Hanjin shipping company, a South Korean shipping company, seventh largest in the world, that is gone bankrupt. Its ships are sitting off of ports. No one's letting them in. And I'm thinking, as harvest comes and we want to hit those international markets, is this on your radar at all?
Well, it's on my radar only from the standpoint that I've read that because of the bankruptcy, there's several things not moving. And in fact, I even read about one either movie star or singing star that's on one of those ships and can't get off and all that sort of thing. So I don't know anything about it by being briefed by people within government. And I don't know to what extent it's a government issue, but I do know that with the timing of things to reach our ports and to get distributed around the United States for the holiday season, it's probably going to mean that a lot of businesses aren't going to get some of the material they need for Christmas to get separated. But I would imagine, and I don't know whether that would be in bankruptcy court in the United States or in some other country, or whether international law would have anything to do with it. I don't have the slightest idea of the process that you got to go through, but if it's in bankruptcy, there isn't usually much interference with the process of bankruptcy courts.
Sure. It's interesting. It's fascinating to me. I haven't seen a lot of major media coverage over it, but I just see it as potentially really impacting Iowa's agricultural economy if we have, difficulty shipping.
Well, in this particular case, I don't know to what extent they're involved in agricultural issues versus non-agricultural issues. And if this company would be hauling grain, as an example, yeah, there could be a problem. But so far, what I've heard, I would put in the category of dry goods.
All right. Well, and that'll impact Main Street as well. I guess we'll just have to keep an eye out for this. It seems like a South Korean bankruptcy wouldn't impact us much, but given global commerce these days, it just may well. Well,
yeah. Let me tell you why it's got to be a concern, even though it's a foreign country, is because the United States, because of what we call our maritime laws and the maritime union, and we tend to be feather bedding in that union and in that part of our transportation, you don't find very many ships flagged United States. Most of them are flagged Panama, Liberia, maybe a lot of other countries, but a lot of them carry Panama and Liberian flags. And it's to get around our maritime laws. If they're flagged in the United States, then you have to follow the crew requirements of our feather-bedded union. And so it could be a Korean ship, and still impact very dramatically American shipping.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley.
I need to ask you, too, there was a little bit of a kerfuffle a couple of weeks ago, people saying that you might move on the Merrick Garland nomination. Have you given that any thought?
Yeah, I've given a thought that what I should have said was my position hasn't changed, and that we go by our letter of February 23rd, that we think the president, next president, ought to make the appointment. And that the people ought to have a voice through the election, and that I stated it very clearly that was my position. But the question from the Rotary Club member was, if I would speculate what might happen if Hillary was elected president, and And so I started speculating. And all people paid attention to was my speculation, not that my position hadn't changed. So the lesson is, Grassley ought to not speculate.
Well, now that you've established your February letter, I think you said February 23rd, is that a mark, you know, for all future presidents? Is that a line in the sand that any future president, Democratic or Republican, can't nominate after that date?
We've at least established this principle, that you shouldn't have one rule for Republican presidents and one rule for Democrat presidents, because you've heard me quote all the Democrat senators that have spoken out on the issue when we had Republican presidents. And so we've established it that if there's a vacancy, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, it ought to go over to the new president. So it should. But it seems to me that history backs us up to some extent. I'll just give one example. Although I gave several examples in speeches over the last few months, but I just gave this example in a speech last week on the Senate floor about Abe Fortas, was nominated by Lyndon Johnson to be Chief Justice. He was already on the Supreme Court, the Democrats controlled the Senate, but there must have been enough sentiment between Southern Democrats and Republicans that Abe Fortas the vacancy of the Chief Justice should wait for a new president. So it ended up, Nixon ended up appointing the new Chief Justice.
Okay, I guess I'm asking you, I'm going to coin a new phrase here maybe, we'll see, that February 23rd date, I believe that's correct, is that what we're going to call the Grassley line, that it's before and not after?
Well, you might be able to call it the Grassley line for this year, but I don't expect anybody to make a Grassley line a historical figure.
But you've established it, well, in our minds, that is, there has to be a before when it's okay or after when it's not okay, right?
Well, I guess if I called it the Biden rule there for a while. If you want to call it the Biden rule, you can call this the Grassley rule, but I'm just following the Biden rule.
And that had a date?
Well, he made his first speech 1987 in the last year of, almost the last year of Reagan presidency. Then he made it again in 92, which was the last year of H.W. Bush presidency. And then Schumer followed on 18 months before George W. Bush left office with a speech to the American Constitutional Society, which is, I think, a liberal organization of lawyers, saying that if there's a vacancy before George W. Bush leaves, that the new president ought to make the decision. So those are the three speeches that I've quoted. I've also quoted Senator Reid when he spoke during one of the Bush controversial nominations for a judgeship, that there's nothing in the United States Senate, there's nothing in the Constitution that says Congress must act on a judge vacancy.
I see that you've written a letter to the manufacturer of the EpiPens, and in response to constituents' requests, the prices of those have gone up like 500% since 2004. You want to get to the bottom of this. Can you briefly tell people what's happening? Is there any movement?
Yeah, Mylan's got a monopoly. Mylan raised the price, I think, 440% in a few years. There's no justification for it, particularly since it's a life-saving thing that's absolutely necessary if you're allergic to peanuts, because you could suffocate. And it's a quick anecdote of adrenaline. It does the job, no doubt about it. And so I wrote and asked for justification of the price increase. We got an answer late end of business Thursday. It really didn't answer all of our questions, but Mylan is going to come in either this week or next week and visit with the staff of every Republican and Democrat member of the Judiciary Committee to try to give further explanation. And if we don't get satisfaction there, we'll follow up with other letters.
Well, personally, I agree with what you did. I think that that was a good thing to do. But, I mean, theoretically, isn't that how capitalism works? Aren't they just doing their job being good market, free market capitalists?
The answer is yes, but I think it's a little bit different. When you have a product that's been around since 1901, I think it's a little different when it's a life-saving drug. I'll compare it to my complaining a couple years ago about Sovaldi. Sovaldi is a drug for hepatitis C. It costs about $90,000 for a treatment. It does treat it successfully, so it might save in the end a lot of money from hospitalization. But if you don't take it today, you won't die with hepatitis C. But if you're allergic to peanuts and your windpipe shrinks and you can't breathe, you'll die. So there's a difference between life-saving and other things. But also, there's more letters to be concerned about. Number one, Minnesota thought through Medicare that maybe Minnesota paid about $4 million too much. The Attorney General there is looking into it, so I wrote a letter to Tom Miller asking him to check it out, and I think he's doing that. If the same thing could be happening to Iowa taxpayers. Then I wrote to the FDA based on the proposition that there was a competitor generic that was not approved by FDA. Why wasn't it approved, and what's in the pipeline to get a generic out there to compete with Mylan's product, EpiPen? And then I wrote to the Secretary of HHS to get some feeling through Medicare and Medicaid how much the big increase in the cost of EpiPens may be costing our taxpayers.
Any last thoughts to share with our listeners today?
Well, maybe not. I didn't really think of anything, so I shouldn't have hemmed and hawed. I should have just said no. Okay.
Thank you, Senator.
You bet. Goodbye.
Thanks to Senator Chuck Grassley for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.